I spread a song so you can sing along with my special guest or two.
Or two.
You like to sing and dance, and this podcast by chance explores musicals for you. Theme song, yeah.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Life's But a Song, a podcast that likes to live in the land of musicals. I'm your host, John, and with me today, well, as you said before we started recording, we're just going through the Riverdale episodes, but the real actual versions of them. It's Ashley Evans, everyone! Woo!
I am back. Hello. It is
been a minute, hasn't it?
I know. I missed you.
I missed you. And
missed
we're here.
So much.
And we're here today to talk about something that Ashley has been chomping at the bit to talk about. We're here. Okay. So technically, it is The Great Performances, Season 52, Episode 15, Next to Normal. But for easier, you know, title, we're talking about Next to Normal, everyone. The book is by Brian Yorkey, music by Tom Kitt, lyrics by Brian Yorkey, directed by Michael Longhurst, and directed for screen by Austin Shaw. It premiered on May 9th, 2025, and according to IMDb, a mother struggles with worsening bipolar disorder and the effects that her illness and its management have on her family. So for you, the listener, this is a West End production that we are talking about specifically, but of a feeling we will be talking about both Riverdale and the original productions at points. Also, at the top of the episode, I do want to say that, like, I am not a doctor.
Oh, neither am I.
I know we did the Crazy Ex-Girlfriend episodes, and I wish I had those outlines in front of me. I do not. So let's get it right off the bat. I don't understand, like, the definition of bipolar, because to me it's the manic and the depressive side. But in what we watched in this West End revival, I more so read it as she's still grieving the loss of a child, even though that the child was 8 months old when he passed away, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And it's been 17, 18 years, something like that.
Yep.
But, like, I mean, wouldn't you?
Yeah, there's...
You carried a human to term, mm-hmm. pushed it out of your body.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that bond. And yeah. Then, because of how did he die?
He had, like, an obstruction in his intestines.
And, like, that is out of your control.
Yeah.
And, like, Casey Levy, phenomenal job.
Amazing. She has such range. This bitch played Elsa and this role.
Yes. And then we have...
crazy.
Eleanor Worthington Cox, who plays Natalie, who it sounds like you did a little research, so I wanna give this one to the audience. She is one of the original West End Matildas.
Isn't that lovely?
And my God, just give her the awards. Just, like, let her play any part and just give her all the awards.
All of the awards. She was the biggest, like, surprise to me going into it. I feel like the thing that I have with Natalie's is the thing that I have in Into the Woods is with Little Red's, because Little Red is, like, because if you've seen me or, like, seen me perform, that is a role that I will be forever until I turn 50 years old, and then I will start being Jack's mother immediately. So, like, I am a character actor through and through, so I'm very protective of my Little Red's and Into the Woods, and I'm very picky about them. I feel that way about Natalie. I've definitely aged out of Natalie, but I have a little bit of regret because I've never gotten to play Natalie, so I'm a little bit picky with my Natalies. Not only did she understand the assignment, she did that and then some, and this girl, like, does not stop crying. Like, when she starts crying in the show, she does not stop crying. And she still sounds amazing. Like, I sound like shit if I've been crying for 10 seconds. She's crying for like 10 songs. And she's still hitting, not only hitting all the notes, but emoting and acting the shit out of it and sounding beautiful and like looking like, I mean, looking fierce as you can when you're crying, but like she is just giving everything. And I'm like, Betty Cooper's tear ducts have nothing on Elle.
I was about to say that because I wrote that down during he's not there, which I wrote wrong on the outline. Sorry. Where I wrote Eleanor Worthington Cox is going to Rule Theater. She's giving Lily Reinhart a run at best tear ducts.
100%. Her tear ducts. This girl has the Niagara Falls of tear ducts.
And the fact that like she's crying and then belts out Superboy and the Invisible Girl
Like 10 seconds later, how'd she do that?
beautifully and still crying
Still crying.
and still. But okay, but to go back to what I was saying about the mental illness here,
We just
like,
vibe on her.
sorry, we will get back to all of this, but I really want to, it's very serious because
Sure, yeah.
like we don't, it's not talked about a lot in musical
Right.
theater. I
Or
mean,
it's sensationalized. Like,
right. I mean, like there was like Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist where they kind of play off of it, and it's not a men it's not a mental disorder for her, but they kind of pretend like it is in a way. And in this
I've never seen
one,
that.
you what?
I've never watched Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. I didn't know there was a
Such a good
mental illness
show.
component.
Yes and no, and then like it is based around an actual disorder that Mary Steenburgen, who's in the show, has.
Oh, that's
So,
interesting.
but in this one, again, I'm not a doctor, but like I don't think at least Casey's portrayal of Diana, she's bipolar. How would you agree on that or disagree?
Oh yeah, they actually, I heard they had mental health professionals present for this production, like
Okay.
at rehearsals, and they had them be like, is this okay? Does this track? Is this in line with bipolar? If this is not, tell us what we need to do. So there was a healthy collaboration between theatricals and mental health professionals to be like, this is accurate, this is not. Don't do this. This is harmful. This is educational. And I think that that is incredible. And I think that this is something that there are next to normal haters out there. And not because they don't like the music, it's more like the subject matter. It's very delicate subject matter to tackle.
Oh my
So
God,
a lot
yes.
of people are like, that's sensationalizing mental health in a way that's harmful. So I feel like the production team for this production was like, let's do better and let's get mental health professionals involved so that we can use it as something that is helpful rather than something that is too sensationalized and too harmful. And listen, there's going to be people who are like, that's still too much, but it's like, maybe you just don't like theater then. Maybe it's not the message of the show. But like, I think it's great that they had people who were professionals to look on and be like, yeah, this is helpful, because at the end of the day, you want to create opportunities for education and empathy when it comes to mental health. And I think they did a really good job with the overall product and actually improved upon past productions of it. So I hope that future Next to Normals take note and they're like, we should make sure that we're doing this correctly.
And like, I can't speak for any other productions, obviously, because this is my first real time watching it, besides the Riverdale episode, which we will probably get to in a sec. But I feel like they're also making commentary on like how psychologists, psychiatrists, psychopharmacologists, whatever, the doctors involved treat bipolar, where that first one we see, whose name I do not remember and I don't really care because I hate him, is throwing different pills and telling her which pills to take with which. And it's like,
Doctor Fine.
yeah, where
She's fine when
you're
she's
sitting there
yeah.
and you're like, well, this is what's wrong with the mental health system.
Yeah.
And it's like the doctors want to just throw you pills because it feels like they get some sort of pay bump or something.
And you'll feel fine.
And you'll
AKA
feel fine.
Numb.
Even though Diana is sitting there saying, I can't feel my fingers or toes. I don't feel anything. Colors are dulled. Like, or she's
and then he
saying,
okay, good, she's stable. Like,
and you're like, but no, like you're supposed to help her. And then like the manifestation of Gabe throughout.
Yep.
Okay. Is he the antagonist of this show?
It depends on what you think he is.
So,
is the thing. Is he a demon? Is he a ghost? Is he a hallucination? I tend to veer towards Gabe is just the personification of grief. So maybe the villain is grief.
Well, no, I do think that the doctors are the villains.
Well, that
in this. Both doctors.
Quinn and Madden?
Yeah.
Think. Ooh, tell me more about Dr. Because I don't like Dr. Fine, but like, tell me your thoughts on Dr. Madden, because this is very interesting.
Well, because Dr. Madden is the one that introduces the electroconvulsive therapy, ECT, which
is that even legal anymore? Like, because I've heard mixed things. I've had a friend who's got it. She's dead now. Not from that. Sorry. Oh my God. What?
Wow. Wow, that went dark.
But I don't think that's legal anymore. It might be. I don't know. It's worth looking into, but there's a lot of problematic stuff surrounding that.
Yeah, it's still around, it looks like. I'm reading really quickly. It is used, according to the Wikipedia page for it. It's used with informed consent in treatment-resistant major depressive disorder, bipolar depression, treatment-resistant catatonia, prolonged or severe mania, and in conditions where, quote, there is a need for rapid definitive response because of the severity of a psychiatric or medical condition, end quote. So it does make sense why they go that route with her.
Guess it's
but
still
like
around.
You what?
I said I guess it's still around. That's troublesome to me. And there are a lot of interesting treatment options out there that I kind of am like, really? But like, that's one that I'm like, I don't know why we still have this. But I don't know anybody who's had it who feels better after it.
I mean, I'm glad though that Dr. Madden doesn't throw pills at her and everything. But like, I feel like, and this could be a script issue. I don't think this is the actor.
He's great.
Yeah, but I want to give him his props. Trevor Dion Nicholas. I don't think that this is his choice, but I think it's a script thing. He says like the side effects, but he doesn't like underline them, you know?
Well, it's like it's a commercial for an antidepressant when you're skipping down the street with The Greatest Showman playing in the background, but like a different lyrics, and it's about an antidepressant, and then the side effects are tiny, and they're like, side effects may include death, but it's like very, very quiet.
I mean, there were moments throughout the show that I was like, why are they dressed like they're in a medication commercial?
Because that's what it looks like. That's honestly, that's a perfect analogy then, because it is like, oh, this is the new thing, and this is going to help you, and it's going to be that, but side effects might be but don't worry. And it like blitzes past that because it distracts you with everything else that's going on in the commercial. And that's kind of, it's as a person who, I don't want to overshare too much, but as a person who has been around the block with mental health in terms of doctors and whatnot, there's good ones, there's bad ones, there's neutral ones that are not good or bad, but they're just like doing their job. It's a lot, like, and it sucks that we live in a society where sometimes you really have to advocate for yourself and do your own research, get a second opinion, talk to other
friends. Like, shop around, right?
Yeah, like, listen to friends who have had side effects with certain medications and then bring that as a concern to your doctor, and then your doctor's like, oh yeah, that is a risk, well, maybe let's try this thing. And that's a good doctor, because they're like, okay, I care about the wants of my patient and not just like, I just want, you know. So it's tricky, and it sucks because that's like, you should be able to ideally go to a doctor and they should be able to help you, and then that's it, that's the end of story. But it's such a corrupt healthcare system, it's not always ideal. I had to shop around for my therapist, who's not a psychiatrist, because that's two different things. If you're not mentally ill, maybe you don't know that. There's psychiatrists, psychologists. Psychiatrists prescribe pills, like the ones in the show. Psychologists are more so talk therapy and other methods. And then there's people like life coaches. So that's like a little bit less clinical, a little bit more like, let's make a list of goals. But there's like, there's a lot of different interventions that you can pursue.
But
and some people do multiple at once. But I personally really, really like my therapist right now. He's like the Gandhi of Saratoga Springs. He's bald and in his 70s. And we recommend movies to each other at the end of each session. And then we come back and talk about it for the first 10 minutes. And I told him to watch this, so I really hope he does.
Great. I was going to say, tell him to watch this. But I feel like, though, so when you just mentioned like the good, the bad, and the ugly when it comes to doctors and everything, I feel like Madden is one of like the neutral leading not good, because I don't feel like anybody's really listening to Diana.
No, this poor woman is traumatized, and she's just like, I'm trying to navigate here. And people are like, pills. And honestly, I wrote down in my notes earlier, I was like, I've been like a Dan sympathizer since day one. The problem is I was 18 years old when this show came out. So I didn't understand how fucked up it is. And now in my 30s, it hits different. It's very fucked up that Dan, although he thinks he, I mean, I think he does mean well. He means well. He loves her. He wants her to be better. But it's less of, I want her to be better because I genuinely want her to be better, and more so because I don't want to deal with my own grief. And Dr. Madden even says, like, hey, yeah, you got to tell her about Gabe. It's not going to be a fun conversation. So lead up to that. Go gently with that. Kind of lead her to that. And then Dan's like, or I'm going to do white man revisionist history and I'm not going to tell her at all. So, and then she.
Right. And it took Natalie to
no,
rip
it was
that
Dr.
Band-Aid
Madden.
Off.
He was like, what, how are you feeling about your son? She's like, my son. He's like, fuck, your husband.
Well,
didn't tell you yet.
Well, I mean, even like before that, Natalie is the one who was like, mom, you were terrible. And like,
oh yeah, she brought to light like the real. She is the real victim in this story, this poor girl.
So do you whose show do you think this is, really? Is it Diana's or is it Natalie's?
I think an argument could be made for either one. I think because Casey is at like the forefront of all the marketing, I would say that it is Casey's show. But
no, I mean like next to Normal as an entity. Or could it be both? It's their show.
Porque no los dos.
And like all the men are secondary. Ooh, I like this. Ooh, I'm
like
liking
that
this
too.
Idea. Yeah. Well, Henry is so tertiary, who cares about him? And the doctors are also tertiary, so who cares about them? But like Dan and Gabe are important, but
sure.
I don't think it's their story nor show.
Mm-hmm.
Where I think this is really about the relationship between mother and daughter.
Which is why that's such a pivotal moment at the end of the show when they finally have their first real fucking conversation of the entire show where they're actually hearing each other for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've been missing each other the whole show. Even though they're on stage together a lot, they're
and they do talk to each other, yeah.
Show, and then they're finally having a real conversation. And that's like the meeting of the minds. And there's so many, oh my God, the staging parallels with the two of them throughout the show. Like sometimes they have like Dan, Diana on one part of the stage and then Henry, Natalie on another part. And they're like overlapping each other. So that's cool. But sometimes it's just Natalie doing something and Diana doing something. But there's a lot of staging parallels between the two of them. And like, if you listen to the soundtrack enough, or if you've seen like a production or a slime tutorial, you're like, well, obviously, yeah, she's her mother's daughter. But there was deliberate directing, staging choices, paralleling the two of them that really made this hit home for me watching this pro shot. And I'm like, they're the same person. I mean, like they're not yet, but like, that's why Natalie is so afraid of her mother, because she's like, I'm going to be that. I'm going to become her. I'm
right.
Doomed to be her. And there's like a line, which is kind of like a throwaway line in one of the therapy sessions, but I picked it up watching the pro shot and she was just like, yeah, My mother, she was so spirited that they kicked her out of the PTA. And I was like, her mother probably also had bipolar. And that's like the only time it's like touched on because she called her
Interesting.
spirited and she got kicked off the PTA. Like, why else would someone get kicked off the PTA for being too spirited unless that was spirited in a negative way where she probably did some manic things that were inappropriate and then she's not on this. So, like, it is passed down. Bipolar can be hereditary. And then there's a line that Dr. Madden has where people, he said that bipolar actually has a lot more in common with schizophrenia than depression. Because people think bipolar, like good mood, bad mood, which is, we're victims of mainstream TV lying to us and not being mentally health literate. But like, that actually is very true because the people I know who struggle with bipolar disorder, hallucinations can sometimes be a big part of that. And unless they are medicated, it is very, very, very hard to navigate. So I empathize a lot with people who have that because it's such a misunderstood disorder on so many levels.
Right.
And
Even I was saying, like, I know it as manic depressive, and you do see that in the show. But
yeah.
then, like, the hallucinations, which I wasn't sure if that was a theatrical device, but it's sounding like it's real. Like,
I think
for.
she sees him, but I think she feels him, and I think the whole house feels him more than anybody is willing to admit. But because she has bipolar, she's in tune with it to a point where it's manifested visually for her.
I have
And
a
that
couple.
makes sense for bipolar because hallucinations are sometimes a
I
symptom.
have a couple of hot takes that I would like to talk about now.
Sure, yeah.
I know there's a phrase for this, so maybe you can help me. When parents have a sick child, that they inevitably have another child that then they can use that second child to like
Yeah.
donate anything to save the first one. I feel like that's
It's
what
the my
Natalie.
sister's keeper
Yeah.
concept where it's like,
Yes.
this one has cancer, let's have another one.
But I feel like that's Natalie for
That's
the
Natalie.
void.
100% Natalie. Yep.
They never really fully outright say it, but I feel like they do say it, right?
This production in general, and maybe it's because it's such a good pro shot, because like I'll be honest, I've never seen a live stage production of it, unfortunately, which I am bummed about, but like maybe there will be more because of this pro shot and I can go see one. But I have seen a lot of slime tutorials of the Broadway one, and
I honestly
I
want to see a
feel like
movie of this, like a movie.
if it was a movie, it would have to be done just like this.
I
Because
feel.
I could see it going the Dear Evan Hansen route where I'm like, why'd you do that?
Well, I feel like because when we do the ECT moment, you can make that so cinematic where you it's kind of like Requiem for a Dream, where you see it happening to her, but then like you see her fantasy and she's singing whatever that song is that I can't remember off the top of my head.
Wish I were here. The one that I want Veronica to sing on Riverdale because I don't want her to sing Superboy and the Invisible Girl.
Wait, okay. We'll get you know what? I'm putting a pin right now in Riverdale because we have to talk about that.
We're talking serious right now,
We're
Ashley.
we're talking about Next to Normal as an entity. And I feel like also I understand that the show is only six people, but I feel like when they were doctors or when they were like ensemble doctors, it did kind of take me out a little bit because I wish it was an ensemble. Or like, something like that. So that's why when thinking about a film version, like a theatrical film version of it, I was like, this will be great to bring in more people, and like we can see like a montage of her visiting doctors, a la My Diagnosis from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. We
I can see
can.
that being a movie choice. I understand why they would do it like this for the stage, but like,
Which, by the way, love the set design for this stage.
love it. It's so good.
The turntable at points representing her spiraling, though, was a little much for me.
There's a lot of spinning in the show.
But I loved how the percussion, or at least the drum set, was like behind the plastic, and at points Gabe was in there as if he was trapped in her mind. It was so well done. And like,
I got chills during Aftershocks. I mean, we'll get into it when we get to Sharps and Flats, but like that fucking part, and then the scrim closes.
Oh my God.
You just see his shadow. I'm like, ooh.
Where I feel like this character, this actor,
Jack Wolf, baby boy,
played it like a villain. That's why I was wondering if Gabe is like, he was dark at points, and he was like, especially at the end when Dan finally sees him, because Dan is finally ready to lay into his grief 17 years too late. But like, he played it more like Jack Wolf played Gabe more like a demon there. And so I did like that.
Fan demon is what I call him.
Yeah.
Basically, he's my favorite part of the whole show. Hands down. He is my favorite part. Jack Wolf specifically is my favorite part of the whole show.
I don't know. Eleanor gave him a run for his money.
He's incredible. They're all solid. There is not a weak member. He just doesn't have as much to do, and I know who you're talking about. But...
But
let me go off on Jack Wolf for a sec.
Okay.
So Gabe is such an interesting character because they leave it kind of up to your interpretation to determine what exactly he is, right? And Aaron Tveit, if you can see like clips of Aaron Tveit playing Gabe in the original Broadway show, totally valid interpretation. I love him. Obviously, he's got a killer set of pipes. We know this. He's like a sexy chaos demon. So there's a lot of him like... The set for the original is very, like, open concept. So this looks like a house. Like, this whole first floor looks like a house, a kitchen, kind of a living area for the family, where it's just very open. There's minimal set pieces, like table, chairs in the original Broadway one. So the top floor, where in both productions, Gabe spends a lot of time because it's almost like he's the puppet master. It's like it's the Lonely Goat Herd from Sound of Music, and he's controlling them, except it's scary. Instead of like Maria and the children being like, oh, puppets. He's like, these are my puppets. But like, he does a lot of like kind of jungle gymmery, I guess. I just made a word up.
Parkour?
Aaron Tveit is doing parkour. On like the, he's swinging around, there's like poles, and he's like swinging around the poles, and like it's like he's a jungle gym, but he looks like a grown man, and it's interesting. He's still young, but he's not Jack Wolf young, or at least he doesn't read as Jack Wolf young. So it's like interesting because I feel like in the original, the idea of Gabe that Diana has concocted in her brain, she's like seeing him as this golden boy that he'd hoped.
Or she hoped. Yeah.
He'd grow up to be like an Adonis, a prom king. The scene before she tries to unalive herself, they're in like prom attire.
Not an all-American reject?
Not an all-American, no. He could never.
Adonis, I had to fit it in somehow.
His voice though. But an Adonis, like a prom king, maybe a jock in school. That's the Aaron Tveit version of Gabe. Whereas Jack Wolf has this like childlike innocence to him, but it makes it so creepy whenever he ever has like a manipulative, scary moment. Like with Aaron, you're like, okay, I understand his deal. He's here to cause chaos. Where Jack, he's a little sweet and playful, so that's disarming. And then he like will contort his face or like start crawling on the counter, and you're like, oh wait, that something's wrong. Something's wrong. That's really scary. It's like the difference in a scary movie between like a young, hot leading man who turns out to be like the serial killer. That's Aaron Tveit. Whereas like Jack is like, oh my God, look at this cute little boy, and then he murders someone.
Like right in front of you. There is no way at the end to reveal. Yeah.
Interpretations on both ends, but I really, really like Jack's interpretation because he's like this impish, spooky Peter Pan. And
yeah, okay, I see that.
It's really, really compelling to watch because whether he's, quote, real or not, the character of Gabe believes he's real.
Okay. And that's so the quote. It's like,
Yeah, he believes he's real and he's acting as if, like, it's like, yes, he's kind of a figment of her imagination, but also the figment believes that it's real. Which
So,
is why people argue are like, is that real or not? Because this actor does such a good job in making you believe that he's like, no, I'm really here.
my issue with this production is that because it is a West End production and because Casey Levy is the only non-British person in the cast, they
And
all are.
Trevor,
And who?
the doctors.
Huh, he is an American actor. You're right. Okay, so because the two of them are the only American, like everyone else is doing an American accent. And I'm just sitting here like, why? You don't have to. This isn't an American specific story. I feel like this is an everybody story. And any so like have and that was my issue I had with Jack Orfrisio. I believe that's how you pronounce his last name. The
His accent comes through a little bit. I'm
His
okay
the
with it,
actor who played
though.
Henry, because I wish he was just more comfortable, because I feel like he was too focused on keeping with the American accent. If he was able to just do his natural accent, I feel like it would have been
I feel like if
a better
anybody can
performance.
keep the British accent, because I think the nuclear family needs to all have the same accents, because it would throw me off if one of them was not the same. Like, either all be British or
Why?
all American, because they're like. This all-American family is like the concept for it, but if anybody's allowed to be British, it's either Henry or the doctor.
Or both, right?
Or both. Except
Yeah.
the doctor's American in real life, so he's not gonna put on a British accent. But like, if
But like,
Henry
you know what I
was
mean, you,
British, I wouldn't care. I'd be like, okay, yeah, totally.
yeah,
British humor, here we go.
because
An
like,
episode of Skins, like.
I mean, Jamie Parker, Eleanor Worthington Cox, and Jack Wolf all had a pretty solid American accent.
Yeah, their accents were not distracting for me. So if the four of them can keep them, it's fine.
I feel like Jamie Parker, who played Dan, slipped every once in a while, but it
Well,
wasn't bad because, you know, they're belting their face off this whole show.
so I love Jamie Parker in this role, but he's gotten some crap from people because speaking of, you know how I said, like, Gabe is kind of the puppet master?
Yeah.
Speaking of puppets. Leave Jamie Parker alone. You're lucky he even performs for you bastards. I love him. I don't care if he sounds like Kermit the Frog when he sings. I don't give a fuck. He can sing it however the
He
fuck he
sounded
wants.
great.
I love him as this. And what I love about theater is like you don't have to have a cookie cutter musical theater voice. Like not everybody has to be the wickedly talented Adele Dazeem. And even she has like a unique voice. I'm trying to think of like a standard like musical theater voice, and I'm only thinking of Adele Dazeem for whatever reason. Okay, Casey Levy, she's got a great standard musical theater voice. Like she can belt, she can mix, she can do light, she can do chest. Like
Shoshana
she's
Bean
got
as
it
well.
all. What?
Shoshana Bean. I mean, I know she's more of a
Shawna Bean,
belter.
yes, perfect. But like, not everybody has to have that. Or like even Aaron Tveit, like he's got a very musical theater-y voice. Jamie Parker does, but he has an accent. So I think because of his British accent and placement with singing, sometimes when he sings, he tends to sound a little bit like Kermit the Frog. And I will agree that people are correct on this. However, I think the beauty of theater is that you can have an interesting sounding voice as long as you're hitting your notes and you're doing the most in terms of acting. Like I would rather watch a show where people act the fuck out of it and they sing well, then sing amazing and act so-so. Especially in a show like this, you want incredible acting because it's very delicate subject material. That being said, I don't think there's anything wrong with Jamie Parker's voice other than he sounds like Kermit the Frog. But, like, honestly, if you're gonna cast, like, next to Muppets, like, if you're gonna, let's, you know that game. You know the game where
That
you
you have
cast
one human and the rest are
one human,
Muppets?
everyone's Muppets. Who the fuck is Dan? Kermit the fucking frog.
Of
Kermit
course.
doesn't want to deal with Piggy's antics. Piggy's Diana. Would you not kill to be like, have Piggy? And she's like, you don't know!
Oh my God.
I know you don't know! Like,
We're going off the
obviously,
rails here,
Kermit
Ashley.
Piggy. But like, I'm just saying, people who give Jamie Parker a hard time for his voice need to back off because he's such a good Dan. And
He
I
was
love
great. And
him. I
here's
love
another
him.
one of my hot takes. Because this is grounded in reality, if these were real people that I was friends with, I would be like, you should not have stayed together after Gabe
No.
passed away.
I don't even think they should have stayed together when she was pregnant with Gabe, to be honest.
Well, no, because they it did seem like, and this could be Casey and Jamie. It could be the script. I'm not sure, but like I said, this is my only viewing of this. It seemed like they genuinely loved each other way back when like you there is that moment where Dan comes out and she takes a hit and Henry is smoking up with Natalie, you know, that parallel that you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Like it felt like they worked. And then once Gabe passed away, it felt like Dan was trying to save the relationship. And I'm not sure if it's because of love or because of loyalty or whatever, but it felt like they should have just been like, we gotta separate. Like, we can't be together anymore.
So, I agree that they definitely loved each other a lot in their own fucked up way. They definitely have a lot of love for each other. But do you think they were ever in love? Do you think they had time to be in love?
I don't know because didn't they? Wasn't the whole point that they had Gabe young?
Yes. So, and that's what I think is I think that they have a lot of love for each other even until the end when they have to part ways. I think there's still a lot of love, but I don't think they
I
were
don't
ever
think they were
in
in
love
love. Yeah.
because they got way too seriously entangled before they had a chance to even fall in love. They got pregnant, and instead of falling in love, they became codependent and they had this unplanned baby, and then the baby died. So then they trauma bonded on top of the codependency. And instead of like
Right.
being like, hey, this was awful, let's reevaluate this situation, they were like, well, now we have to save the thing that we think that we had, let's have another baby. And then your new baby's a victim too, because she can never replace the person who died before she
Right.
existed. So they really never had a chance to fall in love because they spent too long trying to replace something they never actually had.
And
The thing they never got to keep, which was Gabe.
what I did like about Dan is that he is so in to help out Diana. Like he is willing to try anything, it seems like. It seemed like. I don't know again if this is actor interpretation or if it's in the script, but you know, he is the one who drove her to the different therapists. He's prior to the electroshock therapy. How about that? I'll redefine what I'm saying. Like prior to electroshock therapy, I think he was willing to help her in any way. It didn't seem like he was forcing it on her, though.
I think in the way, you know how I said, like, Gabe, even if he doesn't exist, the character, the actor playing the character, believes he exists, like, in character. I think Dan, in character, thinks he is doing everything that he
Okay.
can. I think he's like, I love her so much. I care about her so much.
Like
I
that's the
want to
actor's
do
backstory.
anything I can for her. So I think he feels like he is doing the most for her. And like I said, I started out the show back as a teenager as a Dan sympathizer. And I still do feel for him in a lot of ways. I do think he loves her. I think he wants her to get better. And he's tried really, really hard to be as supportive as he possibly can. But like watching this in my 30s hits differently because I see these little moments where like I don't even think he realizes the selfishness behind his motivation. Like there's a part during It's Gonna Be Good where he's like, oh my God, she's doing great. She's happy as a clam. I'm so happy. He thinks she's doing better. He's completely oblivious to the fact that she has literally dumped all her pills down the drain and because she was feeling numb. And he didn't notice that because all he sees is the surface level. And he's like, oh my God, great. She's great. She's great. So he didn't even really bother to figure out what was actually going on because he wants grief to go away. Like he's deflecting his own grief. So it's like because he doesn't want to deal with his own grief, he's like kind of projecting that onto Diana and he's being like, well, she's the one with the problem. We gotta help her. But by helping her, it's like, no, she's the problem. I'm just the dutiful husband. But really, he's got his own shit that he is not maybe even conscious of at this point in the show. And I think another kind of red flag to this point is that she's clearing out like Gabe's baby things before she tries to unalive herself. And he goes, Diana, I think this is great. I think this is a really good step for you. Good luck. And then he like leaves her. And I'm like, shouldn't you be like by her side while she's doing this? Because this is going to be very painful. But he doesn't want to be. And not because he doesn't love her or care. He doesn't want to confront it himself. He doesn't want to see these baby things.
Right.
So it's like, it's not, he has good and he's the best of intentions.
But that's why
he's such an interesting character. He's very nuanced, and I love this take on Dan because it made me realize these things that I didn't know.
I'm not a Dan sympathizer, I'll say that.
I'm not anymore.
I just think with this viewing of it, it just proves that people are messy. Like, I know I said that there was an antagonist and all this other thing, but it just shows that it's like people are like, this is like a weird slice of life in a way.
Yeah.
Musical where it's bringing about like a real thing, which is the bipolar disorder and grief and all this other thing. Cause like the way that they unfold the layers of who this mysterious person is that's singing, that is only interacting with Diana. Turns out to be Gabe. Because you see, I knew about going into it, I knew about it because of the Riverdale episode, and we did talk about that.
Don't you love when Riverdale spoils everything?
But like in the best way, because I still feel like that was a very strong and very like good episode of Riverdale. Sure. And yeah. But I you brought up It's Gonna Be Good, which honestly, I thought it was all in her head.
Nope.
I didn't think, because a lot of this was recitatives. It was a lot of arguments happening. This now is when I need to define what a musical is to somebody. I'm just going to be like, watch Next to Normal.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it. Because even though there's no like real dancing in it, because that's like the next level in musical theater where it's like, if you have so much emotion, you have to sing about it. And if you can't just sing about it, you dance it. Like this one just shows like all the emotions. The music is written to go with her feelings for the moment or the person's feelings for the moment. But It's Gonna Be Good is one song that I thought that they were an ensemble of her mental disorder. I don't think Dan is actually saying those words. I think she's projecting onto Dan.
That's interesting. That I think either could be true, to be honest. I never thought of it like that, though.
Right. Because it just felt so out of left field. And yes, that's one of the songs that's in the Riverdale episode, so I do know it very well, but because I listen to that album a lot. But yeah, no, I honestly felt like, and maybe it is the Riverdale episode seeping in because that was a hallucination that Alice was having in the episode. But it felt like because he was like singing out to the audience and it was so manic and everything, it did feel like it was her projecting outwardly, Diana projecting outwardly.
That's an interesting, I think that could be a thing.
And again, like this is what, like you keep saying, I feel like this is a show that's up to interpretation because people are messy. Everything is messy. This is messy. And, you know, there is no definitive thing. Like, yes, she leaves at the end and goes to live with her parents to work on herself, which she should have done so many years ago. But, it just is like, there is no conclusion, really. Like, maybe.
And I used to get so mad that she left. I was just like, how could you do that to Dan? He's been there for you through everything. And then, like, upon this pro shot, I'm like, oh, maybe Dan wasn't as awesome as I thought he was. But also, like, she needed to do that because she needed to exercise her own autonomy and make her own choices. And then in order for him to confront his own grief, she needed to leave him because he was always going to be hiding behind her issues and be like, no, she's the one with the problems, and not acknowledging his own. So as sad as it is that that's how that had to happen, and it doesn't mean she'll never come back. Again,
Right.
open-ended. Like, she might come back one day. We don't know, but that's the beauty of theater and nuance. And Casey was even saying in an interview, because there's like a thing of interviews too, with the Next Normal cast, and she's like, it's about people. Like, it's about, they're not good people,
Right.
they're not bad people. They're just
And people
people
are
going
messy.
through things. And I'm like, yeah, like, that's very real because this does happen to people. And granted, it's like heightened for theatrical purposes, but like, bipolar is real, grief is real, depression is real, hallucinations are not real, but people have them. And then feeling inadequate because a sibling meant more than maybe you did is also very real, especially a lot of middle children go through this. There's only me and
The
my
Jan
brother, and
Brady
we're all five.
syndrome.
So, I mean, I'm gonna be an aunt. I just found out
Congrats.
weekend. Thank you.
Okay,
But
so I do want to let's talk about the show history for a hot second,
show
because
history.
this is our time and we need to bring this up. So it premiered off Broadway at Second Stage Theater in 2008, where I'm looking at the Wikipedia page. Anthony Rapp was an assistant director
Oh, wow.
to this. It then went to Arena Stage in Washington, D.C., and it opened on the Broadway on March of 2009, and it ran until January 2011. It was nominated for 11 Tony Awards. It won three. It won Best Orchestrations, Best Original Score, and Best Actress in a Musical for Miss Alice Ripley. Congratulations, Miss Alice Ripley.
Congratulations.
And this production that we are talking about was nominated for four Oliviers. Unfortunately, it did not win, but everyone but Jamie Parker was nominated.
He was so good.
Well, so we have Casey Levy nominated for Best Actress, Jack Wolff as Best Actor in a Supporting Role, and then Eleanor Worthington Cox as Best
Best
Actress in a
actress.
Supporting Role. And then, as well as for Best. It's so funny that for the 2024 Oliviers, it was nominated for Best New Musical.
Best new musical.
Because I guess this is the first time it went to the West End.
So it's new to them.
So it's new to them. That's why, like, when things transfer over here, it's nominated. Like, Sunset. Well, that Sunset Boulevard is a
Best
revival.
old musical.
And Juliet. How about that? And Juliet had a
Yeah.
life at on the West
In the
End, and
West
then
End.
came here, and it was nominated for Best New Musical and everything. Granted, it didn't, for like that example, it wasn't like an almost 20-year jump. It wasn't a 15-year jump, excuse me. So yeah, I just wanted to get that out of the way because I wanted to talk about it. And it was also nominated for a shit ton of like off-Broadway awards. It w only won the Outer Critics Circle for in 2008 for Outstanding New Score, which I love the music in this, and
Music's all bangers.
I'm happy. I need to re-listen, like actually listen to the original album, but like I'm happy that Riverdale kept true.
Oh,
'Cause like
yeah.
when we did the birthday cabaret a few years ago, you talked about how Riverdale changes stuff around, ups the key, blah blah blah. They may have fucked with the keys, but it didn't sound like they
I'm okay with key fuckery as long as it is better
or
for the person who
comfortable.
sings it.
Yeah.
Like,
But it didn't sound
I think
like they
I'm
made
Just
a
the Mountains
ballad out
is
of
in a different
something
key.
that wasn't a ballad. I'm sorry, what'd you say?
I think I Miss the Mountains is in a. I would have to go back and listen, but like, it struck me when I was listening to it the other day on the way home. I'm like, I think Casey is singing this in a different key than Alice,
Yeah.
but it works for them.
Which
Oh
I
my
wrote
God.
down, so this isn't about skiing.
Remember when we went on the bunny hill? I
I
missed
miss the
the mountains.
mountains. Yeah. Okay. So, Riverdale of it all. Let's get into it.
The Riverdale of it all.
Honestly, I feel like Tessa, our good
Oh,
friend Tessa,
Tessa, have you seen this? Have you seen this pro shot, Tessa?
but I feel like because she's the one who wrote a lot of the musical episodes, I feel like she understood this one very well.
Yeah.
And it played very well for the show. They were able to throw in their bullshit, you know, their crazy ass storylines and everything. But like, Matchkin and Lily sold this. And then Tyson Ritter as well.
That was like, remember when you were like, oh my God, where were the Charles and Polly actors in the other musical episodes? And I was like, John, I'm going to blow your mind.
You blew my mind. You did.
That was not them. That's some girl from The Voice and the guy from All American Rejects.
So good. But
I still love to hear him sing all the songs. I don't know what his acting experience is, and I don't know where I would cast him in the show at all.
You know who I would
sing all the music.
You know who I would love to hear on like an all-star album or something? Brandon Urie.
Brandon Urie can do anything.
But I feel like him singing Gabe. Wait, am I saying the right name?
Brendan.
Panic at the Disco.
Brendan Urie, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Into the Unknown, yes. I would love to hear him on some sort of like BCEFA or like a deluxe album of some sorts. Like they're getting a celebrity cast together to just do the album. I would love him to sing, to skrelt out Gabe's parts.
I saw him in Kinky Boots, and he can do musical theater.
Well, but like, I know he's not the right age, and that's why I'm saying it this way.
Just to sing the music, though.
Or like a concert version or something. Like, I would love to hear him skrelt out I'm Alive.
I want to hear him sing Superboy and the Invisible Girl, personally.
Who would we want as Eleanor? Like, all-star. Pick an all-star. And it doesn't matter. We're not casting.
It doesn't have to be type, just like vocally. We want to hear shred on that.
Yeah.
My brain said Chapel Roan, but I don't think that's the answer I want to give. But now I do want to hear Chapel Roan sing musical theater.
Can I throw out? I want to throw out a musical theater girly. Erica Henningsen.
Oh, I love her.
I feel like she would.
She would have played this role at some point. I think she's aged out of it by now, but like she would have played this role.
But I, if we're doing like an all-star concert version of this, she could fuck shit up. In
she
the best way possible.
Up. Erica can fuck shit up.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to talk about before we get into Sharp and Flat?
Oh my goodness.
Okay, you know what? Actually, I do want to tell a quick story. So I was watching this at work, right?
Okay.
I started it before the show started, and I had to go upstairs to start the show after watching Maybe Next to Normal.
Well,
so I went upstairs. I'm going to cut the story probably, but I wanted to share it with you because it was hilarious.
No,
I ran into company management and they were like, John, are you okay? And I went, no.
Of course I'm not okay.
I'm watching the pro shot of Next to Normal. They're like, I've never seen it. I went, oh my God. There's this one song. It's beautiful. And anyway, but is there anything else though you want to talk about before we get into Sharp and Flat?
I just wanted to point out that because Gabe is primarily someone who interacts with Diana throughout the show.
Invisible scene partner, yeah.
Because you think that is the only person who is in tune with him, but that's not actually it. But you think the whole show that that's the case. It's interesting to point out that like a lot of his actions are yes ands to things that she does. So
when
Henry and Natalie are kissing, she's like, I didn't even know she got a boyfriend. And he goes, ew. But it's just like a continuation of her thought. Or like
it was
the doctor, like he's like, okay, go down a flight of stairs. She goes, stairs. And then like he starts walking down the stairs. So I just think that he's a really good yes ander.
I feel like I want this pro shot.
You want this pro shot?
I want this pro shot because I know it's leaving PBS soon, like the website.
Goodness.
But I think I want to get like a DVD of it or something.
A DVD. Remember DVDs?
I have a shit ton of them still,
I
yeah.
have so many DVDs.
Every once in a while, I have to bust one out for an episode because I can't find it anywhere else on the internet, so.
I was gonna say, but like, he's like a really good, like, if you want a good yes ander for your improv troupe and you don't have one, just hit up
Hit up
a fake
Gabe.
ghost boy.
Yeah.
And he's not a ghost, but it's just easier to call him a ghost. Also, as a wardrobe person,
Okay.
because you're like very in tune with like costume wardrobe choices, stray wardrobe observations. Diana wears a white shirt in Act One, but a black one in Act Two. Is it because she spends so much of Act Two in the dark because she can't access her memories?
Yes.
Okay.
And since you brought it up, I think this production missed out on a great opportunity to have Gabe wearing a similar color to the onesie that she pulls out later. Because I feel like that would have been perfect. So then it's a visual thing. And because the onesie that they picked was like a mustardy yellow, it looked like, if I remember
Oh yeah.
correctly, or
Yeah.
brownie or something, or brown or something. But like if you are able to like have your Gabe, free advice, everyone, if for anyone doing Next to Normal, in my opinion, if you were to have your Gabe wear a t-shirt, because it's very like of the time, right? And he barely has layers or anything changes on him. I feel like if you give him a t-shirt that is similar color to whatever onesie or object or whatever she's pulling out at the end, because I mean, in this production, it was a onesie and it was a sad moment that she cried into it. But like, if you're pulling out a blankie or some fabric baby thing, if you have your adult or teenage Gabe match the color of that, I think that would have been just like perfection.
So maybe like a blue shirt and a blue onesie to match that.
Yes.
But also keep the gray hoodie, because this was another stray wardrobe observation I had. I said he wears a gray hoodie
He
throughout
had
the
a
show.
couple of looks, it looked like. I feel like at one point he had a flannel shirt on or something.
That's when he's leaving.
Yeah.
Except
So
then he
it, which
doesn't.
is, which to me, it's
No, wait. No, that's
weird.
Natalie. She wears a gr Natalie's wardrobe was fire. I fucking loved all of her clothes in the
I
show.
loved her hair.
Her it was like frazzled.
I feel like they're both not wigged.
I hope not, because hair goals.
Yeah,
But
which was
his gray
fantastic.
hoodie, I was like, is that because he's kind of shades of gray? Because he's like an ambiguous being. It's like sometimes he's sweet, sometimes he's spooky. Is he real? Is he not real?
Part
Is
of me just
he?
wishes that Gabe is in one look, kind of like Connor in
I think he is in one look.
but like I feel like if it's been a couple of days since I watched this, so I haven't I my memory's losing it a little bit, but like I feel like
Oh, we got to put you in a black shirt. Oh, wait.
he had
You
layers
are.
of things that he took on and off, and I was like, just give him one look, like Connor in a what is that
Evan
show?
Hansen.
Thank you, Dear Evan Hansen.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's get into Sharp and Flash, shall we?
Sharp Flash.
So in this section, we're going to highlight some moments, whether or not we talked about it. If we liked it, it's sharp. And if we didn't like it or thought it could change, it's flat. I do have some flats, but it's not really about the show.
And you're like, I'm mad at myself for not watching this sooner, and I'm mad at myself for not watching this sooner.
Surprisingly, did not write that down. My first flat, though, because we're going to rip this Band-Aid off. I flatted that they censored this. I get it. It's
Yep.
on PBS.
Me too.
But like, this is
Negative
part of a larger conversation I'm having with television and film, where
one.
like, still to this day, in a movie, if you say fuck once, it's PG-13. And I'm like, why? It's a word. There are some words that we put so much emphasis on that it's like we need to stop because who fucking cares?
They're just words. If you're worried about it, put a trigger warning and be like, this production says fuck a bunch.
Right. Yeah, because especially when like later in the show when Natalie was saying bull and Dan was going language. I'm like, she said bull. There was one point where she goes bull. She blah blah blah, and I was like, did she just say bullshit?
She said this is fucked in the actual one.
But I mean, like, in while watching this, because I have my captions on as well. It's bull, period. She, next sentence, she, blah, blah, blah. But it sounded like, nah, it sounded like Eleanor said bullshit. And I was like, yes, you got one in.
Got it. You slipped it past.
My next flat is for accents. Which, again, you could have done anything, really. I think the family had a good, like, stronghold on their accent and where they were located. Henry is the one outlier that I was just like, all right, guy. But also, I think it would have been fascinating if, as much as I did love Casey Levy, if they hired a British actress to play Diana.
And then they
were all British.
I'd be okay with them being British, but they all four have to be.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not sure how Casey's British accent is, and I don't want to put that on her, but if they did hire a local...
She's from Canada. I feel like they're happier people there, and when you're a happier person, you can do more stuff, I think.
And then my last flat is for the Steadicam work that happens in this. There's some weird moments where there's like a camera on stage and they're doing extreme close-ups, and I was like, we don't need this. This show doesn't need this. There was one song where that happened a bunch of times, and I was like, gross, no, we're done.
What song was it?
I can't remember. I honestly can't remember.
It's going to come to you at like 3 a.m.
Of course it is. But what were your flats?
Mine was also for dubbing the swearing. Like,
yeah.
I know. Like, it watered it down in a Disney way, and I don't like that. I could have done without that.
Because listening to the original cast album, you know, she says, like, my son's a little shit.
Yep.
And there's a couple fucks in there, and I'm like, where is this?
More than a couple.
Yeah,
I watched it with a group of people, and we screamed the swear words out.
Like Rocky Horror.
But then we weren't allowed to say anything else because we had to watch. But like when they were missing, we had to go, fuck! So anybody who couldn't hear the audio and just heard us, like a neighbor, would have been like, those people are just screaming swear words every 5 seconds.
What was your other flat that you had?
Awkward mic placements, specifically on Diana's forehead, looking like a weird facial mole. Well, she's singing the shit out of I Miss the Mountains, and there's just this thing in the middle of her head. I'm like, that couldn't have gone anywhere else. Really? Really?
I think I would have rather the Madonna microphones that like follow the cheekbone. I think I would have rather that for this production.
If they all had them, I'd be like, yeah, fine.
Right. Well, they all did the forehead thing, but it was just different levels, and Casey's was just like down by her eyebrows, and you're like,
somebody needed to pull that shit up.
Yeah. So every once in a while in this section, I have what I like to call a natural. It is neither a sharp nor a flat. In this case, technically, it's both, and that is for the revolve. the revolve on set.
It's there.
I liked it, but then when they're using it as like, it's a little too on the nose when they use it for her spiraling.
I'm the
That's why.
Kind of stuff. I'm like, ooh.
There were moments when like she was walking in place and it was rotating. I was like, this is beautiful. I think it worked out in its favor at the end when like Dan is crouched down crying on one side. Gabe is on the counter and Diana is on one other point, you know, and like it keeps rotating around. Like that was great. But then like, you know, whenever she had a manic moment, like the sandwich moment, and it turned around, I was like, oh, she's spiraling, and you're literally turning it in a
what
spiral.
A giant merry-go-round appeared on stage every time she spiraled.
Oh, Jesus. All right, sharps. Unless you have any other flats or naturals. I'm sorry, I jumped the gun.
Sharps.
Sharps. See, here's the thing. I may not have a lot of sharps, but they're pretty heavy sharps.
Okay.
I sharp the set and lighting designs, even though, yes, I had an issue with the turntable, the Revolve. That kitchen set, having running water, blew my mind. Like the usage of the lights and where Gabe was on set, having the band on the orchestra on set as well
I love
was
that.
very well done, very modern. Loved that. I loved the staircase. It worked out perfectly. I feel like this is a small theater, so I think they used the space wisely.
Oh, yeah. And with just six cast members, like, they filled out the whole space and then some.
And
And
like there were
then.
moments where I didn't even notice that they moved the counter the
Yeah.
for like the therapy sessions or anything like that. Like I was just like, oh, now it's upstage. Interesting. I didn't see that this happening. And like all the lighting effects that happened with Gabe when he sings and everything, it was so fucking cool. And projections.
Oh,
Okay, so I am going to sharp the whole cast because yes.
you do. Yeah.
However, I do want to give a special shout out sharp to Eleanor
Eleanor
Worthington
Worthing Cox.
Cox
Yes.
and her tear ducts.
And her tear. Three sharps, one for her, one for each tear duct.
Yes.
All of them.
I'm gonna sharp the music. This is a wonderful score. We didn't really talk about it, but like we did this wasn't the conversation we needed today.
Oh, don't
And
worry, we will in my sharps.
yeah, but like the music was wonderful, and I was listening. I was trying to listen to the original cast, and it didn't feel like they changed a lot musically. Like
No.
I feel like they use the same instruments. I don't think they, right? Would you say that? Like they didn't.
Yeah, the orchestration's like the same.
Yeah, and then my
Oh.
last sharp is. It's a very specific moment. The beat at the end of Light, when the lights dim for a second when the music goes out. Oh, that was
Yes.
beautiful.
Yep. That's a good one.
That's stagecraft right there.
Good one.
Anyway, what are your sharps?
So many. I also sharped the whole cast. Every single one of them breathes new life into the story. So it was really interesting to. I watched a lot of clips of the original Broadway one because I didn't have time to like watch
A full
an
thing.
entire slime tutorial. I did watch this one three times, so I didn't have time to watch a slime tutorial. But I feel like just juxtaposing the different characterizations of each person, like both iterations are very like interesting, but I think these characters have new life breathed into them because of these actors and the way they were directed too. So we love that.
Yeah, shout out to Michael Longhurst, like
Michael.
you
Love you,
did it.
dude. I sharped the small, sillier moments throughout the show that add levity to a much darker backdrop. So like the fridge jump scare when like they're all in their little doctor uniforms and they pop out of the fridge together, that
That
I
was, yeah.
heckled. Jamie Parker with a backwards baseball cap and a bong saying, "I know we're too young, but we're not. I'm almost 22." That cracked me up. Henry's horrified face when Diana straight up mouth kisses him. That cracked me up. There were just like little moments of funny throughout, and you needed those to
But then
kind
you
of.
realize that, like, the kiss moment is a little darker than it's presented.
Maybe she thought it was like Gabe in some way.
Right.
But
'Cause
like
then later she has
it's
that
like
moment of, like,
self.
you remind me of, like, after
Yeah.
the electroshock. I'm using the wrong name, but it's essentially the same thing, I feel
Electroshock,
like.
right?
It's called electroconvulsive therapy.
Electroconvulsive.
But it's the same thing. They're still shocking your brain.
I think colloquially they use the same th
Yeah.
I won't flat you for
Thank you for not flattering me for that.
that.
Sharps, continue.
All of the parallels between Diana and Natalie, like she really is her mother's daughter, and that really drove that point home and made it that much more compelling and that much more satisfying is not the word, cathartic, when they finally do embrace towards the end and she just fully breaks down in her arms, because I feel like they haven't had a lot of moments like that. So it's like, all of these parallels leading up to that was really my heart, my tear ducts. I'm
Everything.
not Eleanor level with my tear ducts, but like I was close.
You're not even Lily either.
I'm not even Lily either. I wish. All of and speaking on parallels, there is this haunting moment in I Miss the Mountains where she's like, before she starts singing the song, Diana's watching Natalie and Henry have a moment, and it's super cute, and Natalie's giggling. That's like the happiest she is in the whole show at the very
The one
beginning of
smile
the
she
show.
has, yeah.
She's a giggle giggle, and then she starts to sing about her youth, and Natalie like is on the same plane as her, and she goes to grab her hand, and Natalie's hand slips off the counter, and she crosses behind her and walks off stage. And it's almost like Natalie's a ghost, which is weird.
Oh, I didn't pick
Because,
up on
like, the
that.
whole time you're like, well, Gabe is the presence that kind of haunts the narrative of the show. But, like, on that moment, it was, I got chills, like, full body chills. Because she's like singing, she's, was a time that I flew. And she, like, goes to grab her hand, and Natalie's not even aware that she's there, and they just, like, miss each other. And so, this is
Interesting.
this, like, parallel that I was like, oh my God, even though they're both alive and in the same house, it's like they're on two different planets. She really is like the invisible girl in her, and that's so heartbreak. But that's, I guess that's definitely a director choice. So again, shout out to you, Michael. Sharp to all of I Miss the Mountains, every single little bit of it, all of Casey's vocal choices, amazing. I loved them. Again, I love the original, so it does not detract from that, but it just, it's a different color. A different coat of paint for a different wall.
Yeah.
Case on
Nice.
that, but like delicious vocal runs and choices. Amazing. We love Casey. Sharp to the entire sequence of You Don't Know, I Am the One, Superboy and the Invisible Girl, and I'm Alive. It like that those all happen one right after the other. It is such a great sequence because you get the point of view from all four family members. So you get Diana, you get Dan, Gabe's a little bit in that. You get Natalie, and then you get Gabe again. And it's like, this is kind of where we're at as a family, and this is our fucking day to day. They're all bangers, also. Like, these songs are fucking
So
bangers.
good.
Brilliantly executed sequence, brilliantly directed, brilliantly sang, acted. Those emotions were palpable as fuck. Like, it was so good. Sharp to the parts that made me cry most. How could I ever forget when they're singing and she's starting to remember Gabe again and he's looking at her and she's looking up to the sky and she's thinking about losing Gabe and he's thinking about losing her. So they say, the day that I lost you, it's clear as the day that we met, but she's singing about Gabe and he's singing about Diana because he feels like he is mourning her. So
Yes.
like that fucking hit and I was like, oh, right in the feels. And then maybe slash next to normal, obviously you
Oh.
that with the embrace, like Eleanor, you got me in the feels, girl. I
Give her
cry
all the awards. Just
every
like give it to her.
time. Sharp to Natalie's wardrobe. I love the tights with the Converse and the shorts over the tights. And like the oversized cardigans with like the fun t-shirts underneath, especially the Sesame Street one.
I wasn't sure how I felt about her dance dress.
Oh, I mean, it was fine, but I'm more so talking about like her Superboy outfit with the, she's got black tights, she's got like jean shorts, she's wearing Converse All-Stars with an oversized sweater, and then she has a Sesame Street shirt on
I mean,
underneath. And I'm like,
I liked her
I
styling.
love.
Yes, it was fabulous, but like that dress. I don't know. It's kind of
I mean, the
It's kind of like a Pretty in Pink, you know, when you're like, oh, that's the dress. Like, that's kind of I get it. It works for like this type of family because they're supposed to be like middle class, upper middle class. But like, come on.
What dress would you put her in?
I don't know. It felt too young for her.
She's just 16,
I know
though.
she's 16, but it felt like junior prom. Not junior prom, like junior high.
Gotcha. No, I could see that. I said Wendy from Peter Pan, question mark. There's a lot of Peter Pan in this show.
So much. Any other sharps?
Two more. I have one for Aftershocks, where he's behind that glass wall. His hands are like pressed to the wall. He's singing. They're projecting like her electricity behind him and behind the band. And then the scrim comes down and you just see his shadow and it is like creepy ass Tim Burton ass like shit. Like he's
Jack
creepy.
Wolf,
And I'm
how
like,
dare you?
that fucked me up in the best way. Also, sidebar, Jack Wolf and Eleanor Worthington Cox look like Tim Burton inventions.
And I also felt like Casey Levy was a little too young to be their mom,
I think it
looking
was
wise.
okay. She's like in her 40s. Did you know that?
She is.
She looks great though. That's why. She
Because the
looks like
character's supposed to be, I guess that is the age of the
anything.
character.
Jamie Parker might have been a little too old, but I'll forgive it because he's great.
Right.
But she was the right age because she got pregnant in college at like little older than Natalie
But
and
like
then
she still looks young.
stop looking so good for your age,
How dare you?
Casey.
How dare and
Stop
then
being
sing
so
the shit out of
high.
it and make me
It's like
cry.
menopause, bitch.
What is your last sharp?
And the last one is the I Am the One reprise. Reprise? Reprise.
Eh,
Reprise.
reprise.
The way that Gabe is like
Transforms into a demon.
over and he's got like these shifty eyes and he like saunters towards Dan behind the counter and he's like, you just don't know who I am. Whenever he comes out of the dark, it's very much surprise, bitch. I bet you thought you'd seen the last of me. Like, that's
Look
what
at you
happens every
bringing up
time
a
he gets up.
meme.
But he like comes over and he's like so creepy. And then he gets him in a chokehold and he's like, why didn't you go with her? And he's like so upset. And then they like yell sing at each other, except it's not yelling because it sounds technically very good. But like they're so angry and so emotional and he's sobbing and it's like he's just seen a ghost because he kind of has, but like in his mind, that's such a great fucking moment. It's so good.
So I'm altering this last question. I know
Yeah.
you probably have a list written down, but I'm changing it up on you right off the fly, or off the bat. Which album would you li like to add to your life's playlist? Original, this version, or Riverdale?
Riverdale, I love you, but this is not even a competition for you. I'm sorry,
I don't
baby.
know, because they. For being not like Broadway level singers, I feel like they still did a great job in
Oh,
that
I
one.
would put all three on my life's playlist, but if I can only pick
I
one,
mean, you could pick all three. Who cares? This is
I would do all
if,
three. I would
yeah.
do all three, but if I had to pick,
How about your or what's your order? What is so R
yeah.
Riverdale's third place.
Riverdale's third. I would pick this as first, specifically for Casey Levy. No shade to Alice Ripley. Like her timbre is a little spooky, and I love that for this show, but there's something like ethereal about Casey's voice that I'm just like, specifically for I Miss the Mountains Alone, like I would put this at the top.
I think I'd agree
And
with
then
you, even though I
for Jack
listen,
Wolf's I'm Alive, also I would put this one at the top.
even though I do sometimes fall asleep listening to the Riverdale album.
That's okay.
No, I love it. I love it because I put on It's Just Another Day and then I'm out by the end of the song.
I would love to listen to Cole Sprouse sing in my spare time.
He doesn't sing in Light because he's a fucktard.
He doesn't want to do it anymore. He's like, you made me sing so much,
But he
guys.
just had to move his mouth. He didn't have to sing. Just move your mouth. Have somebody else sing it for you. Have Tyson Ritter like sing for him at the end. Who cares?
And then Tessa Leigh Williams is like, Cole, I just need you to sing one more time. And he's like, Tessa, Tessa,
No.
listen,
Shut up. You shut up.
Tessa.
And on that note, Ashley, we're done with the episode. We
We're done
did
with the
Next to
episode.
Normal finally.
I'm so glad you liked it.
Oh my God.
It's one of my faves.
I honestly feel like if I wasn't watching it at work, I would have more of an emotional response to it than I did. Because I did cry twice that I noted. I cried during Superboy and the Invisible Girl, and then I cried
Course.
again heavily, as I said, after Maybe. But I feel like if I didn't pause it after then, I would just be like ugly crying until the end.
Of course, if it's a great cathartic cry, like if you just like are like I'm in my feels, it's kind of like
Yeah.
coming, but for your emotions. So instead of, doing that, just watch this and then your brain will come.
But Ashley, on that note, what do you
That's
have
my
to
review of Next to Normal. Your brain will come.
plug or promote?
I'm so glad you asked. If you've been following my journey on Instagram or in general, guys, I am doing stand-up comedy again. So I have two shows coming up, one on July 13th at the Whiskey Cellar, and one on July 14th at Laughter Party at Kogame, and they're both in the East Village. So if you would like to come, you can follow me on Instagram at Schleebly. I'll be posting in my stories. I can get y'all a discount code.
What up?
And
She's funny. You
nobody.
should go see her.
Thank you so much, John. I love John has come to my shows and I love his laugh. It makes me happy.
I'm sorry I haven't gone recently, but well,
Herpes button.
maybe
Maybe he's coming at
coming at
last.
last. Yep.
Really good, John.
Yeah, you're welcome. And if you, I don't know, are in a production of Next to Normal and would love to invite myself and Ashley
I'd love
to
to.
go see it,
I'll
please
come.
let me know. You can email me at buttersongpod@gmail.com, also on Facebook, Instagram, Threads. And I think I should probably start plugging this as well. We have a YouTube page, everyone. Yeah. As of this recording, only episode 450 is on there, but I feel like, Ashley might make an appearance at some point.
Is this gonna be on there?
No. No,
I'm
but
wearing
another.
makeup today, John.
I know, but like, another thing that you wore makeup to, and, another filmed thing that I'm going to probably upload at some point.
I just got really excited, but I don't want to give away things.
Oh, it's it.
Gonna wink.
Yeah, I mean, I got rid of TikTok, so I think I need to transfer the videos elsewhere. So this way, they have a life and views and everything. And if you want to be part of the next episode's conversation, well, we will be discussing two episodes of Bob's Burgers. We'll be discussing Topsy and Art Crawl.
Oh my goodness. What a show.
Yeah.
It's a hilarious show. That's a great one.
Well, Ashley, thank you so much for popping back on, going on this emotional roller coaster with me and
Course.
with the listeners. Yeah, this was a good conversation.
Thank you for having me again. Once again, it's always a pleasure.
Oh, I love having you.
I love
We
you.
got to get you to come back on more episodes because we need more episodes from you.
I
Which we have planned, but
We have plans.
we have plans, but we need more plans.
We
But
need more plans.
anyway, everyone, thank you for listening. And bye for now.
Special thanks to Aaron Choi for creating the pod's artwork and to Nick Bombacino for composing the theme song and the jingles. A huge thank you to CastBox for hosting this podcast. And thank you again for tuning in to today's episode of Life's But a Song. Bye for now, everyone, and have a musical day.